Hi, I'm Dove, and I'm here for recovery. this is a recorded portion of our morning Guard Your Eyes call, which is on Thursday mornings only, and starts at 8, around 8, and when people show up. This morning I was 3 minutes late. I apologize. And then ends around 9, someplace around 9. If we start late, then sometimes I go late. That's a big deal. The topic that I asked the guard to put up on the website for an announcement for today's well, not discussion, because rarely people talk on this call, which is okay. But the topic is Purim. After Purim's over, I don't think many people are interested in Purim. But this is a recorded call, Chacham Einav Barosho. The pasuk says, Chacham Einav Barosho, meaning the wise person, his eyes are in his head. Chacham Einav Barosho. You can touch the pasuk, I think, in two ways. One is Chacham Einav Barosho, a Chacham, a wise person. His eyes are in his head, meaning that, or Chacham Einav Barosho, meaning a wise person, his eyes are, they go first. You know, they're barishon, sort of, like it would be a scriptural, fancy-schmancy way of saying that his eyes go first. Like mi barosh, you know, who goes first, you know? Naphtali Elech Barosh, you know, whatever. Gad and Reuven, Gad and Chatisheva Menashe, with Moshe Rabbeinu's agreement, went Barosh, you know. So Chacham Einav Barosho means that a Chacham, a wise man, Einav Barosho, his eyes lead him. In other words, he doesn't just act without looking first and seeing. You know, look before you leap. You know, he doesn't just act without seeing and examining the situation. But the other pshat, which is the more popular pshat in Chacham Einav Barosho, is that a wise person, Einav Barosho, his eyes are in his head, meaning that he thinks about what he sees, and he doesn't have his eyes separated from his head, his thoughts, but rather his eyes are part of his thinking process. And that's all they really are. He doesn't judge b'maras einav. He doesn't judge by what he sees, and that's it. But he takes what he sees into account, and he really thinks it over before he makes any decisions. And that way he has a better chance of doing the right thing. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, mar be'etza, you know, if you take more etza, then you'll be more successful. The pasuk also says, beautiful pasuk says, ha'adam yira la'einayim, the people see according to what comes in their eyes. You know, we just see the surface of everything we're looking at, and that's what we perceive. And Hashem looks at the heart. So it's very sweet. What the pasuk is saying is that ha'adam yira la'einayim, people see according to the eyes. When you look and you see things, what do you actually see? What do your eyes? What do your einayim? What do your einayim? Your eyes actually see. If you learn the science of it, it seems that what your eyes see is the surface of everything, the light that bounces off the surface of every object that's in your field of vision. That's what you see, and that's the only thing that you see, unless you're Superman and you have X-ray vision. You just see the surface. You don't see the insides of anything. You only see the surface. The Elokim Yirala Levav, you know, or Hashem, I forget which word the Pasuk uses there for God. Yirala Levav, meaning he sees the heart of the thing, what's inside, you know. He doesn't see the surface, just the surface, but rather he sees the entire object, including the heart, the inside of whatever is, you know. So that's a beautiful difference, beautiful thing to be aware of, the difference between how Hashem judges things and how we judge things. The person who has Einav Barosho knows how to plan ahead, and he or she looks at what's before them, and they don't just see the surface, but rather they try to do what Hashem does, and they look inside the matter. They try to see inside what's going on, and they realize, here comes a potential danger for me. Here comes a situation that I need to plan for. This is a situation that's an opportunity for me to accomplish something, or to give something or produce something or, you know, grow in a certain way. And they prepare themselves, or at least they go after, you know, they chase after good opportunities instead of let them just pass on by or ignore them, you know. Chacham Einav Barosho. So Purim, right now at the time of this recording, Purim is a holiday that's over. You know, Purim happened last week. So, you know, what's the point? You know, what's the point in talking about Purim now? But there is a lot to gain talking about Purim even for people now, because even this year, because Pesach is coming. And the next Thursday, God willing, I'm going to talk about Bein Hazmanim, which is a very timely topic next Thursday, I think, if I'm getting the calendar right. Pesach is pretty close. And, you know, it's about 2 weeks away. The Bein Hazmanim is a time when a lot of people have a lot of problems, a lot of lustaholics and people with lust issues, sex issues, lust issues, pornography and masturbation, etc., have all kinds of problems. And worse than usual. So I want to have a talk about that. But still, today the topic, really, I want to focus on a lesson or two from Purim. And it's not going to be very long and drawn out. It's going to be a pretty short call. The connection between Purim and Pesach is very, very strong for two reasons. One is because of the Inyan, and one is because of the history. The Inyan that connects the two is because Adar leads into Nisan. So, you know, if Adar leads into Nisan, there's a reason for that. There's a reason that Adar leads into Nisan. The holiday of Purim was a holiday that helps us, you know, was sort of a geula of sorts, you know. We were nigal from, you know, this... Haman of Russia from Amalek. It was a very, very powerful event that's similar to God saving us from Mitzrayim in that way. Just like he saved us from Mitzrayim and Paro, who wanted to really destroy us forever, he saved us from Haman, who wanted, you know, nothing but to kill us. And there are other very basic connections, but that I think is one of the most basic. You know, that's one of the most basic connections. The other big deal is that Purim is full of Nisim, just like Pesach is full of Nisim. You know, Pesach, the Nisim start with you know, historically arranging, God historically arranging the Jewish people to be taken down to Mitzrayim in the first place. It starts there with the brothers and how Hashem used human emotions and played the game, you know, the chess game, organizing what would happen and how it and how and what the outcomes would be and how what happens affects things that, you know, that, you know, that actually happen. The brothers and Yosef could have had the same arguments without ever ending up in Mitzrayim. You know, oh, Hashem is this kaviyachol, so to speak, like a chess player who we make our choices and he does what he wants using our choices. He doesn't work against us ever. He always works with our bechira, always. Never works in spite of us, always works with us, which is the whole miracle of Hashgacha. And how there's no contradiction between Bechira and Yediya, meaning God's knowledge of what happens and will happen, is no contradiction to Bechira for this reason, because of his genius, so to speak. You know, it's but anyhow, so he arranged the events of the Gullus in Mitzrayim, so to speak, not a Gullus really, but, you know, that experience in Mitzrayim. He arranged that to happen through the conflict of Yosef and the brothers and various other events. And then the miracles continued where he let the Mitzrim succeed at what they were doing, which made the Jewish people need us. The Mitzrim's choices led them to be used as the tool to fulfill the Brit Ben Habasarim, you know, that Hashem made with Abraham. And that caused us to be enslaved there successfully and make us come down to a point where we needed God. And then the events, miraculous events, unfolded with all of the miracles of the 10 Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf and the matzah being baked, you know, and the on the way out and all this other stuff, you know. They sort of ended with that water, the bitter water is getting sweet at Mara. Or after Mara, whatever. Anyway, so miracles, miracles, miracles. The whole Pesach is miracles, miracles. Purim is full of miracles, too. If you read the Megillas Esther, it's full of miracles. It's just that they're hidden miracles. It's God arranging things behind the scenes in a manner that you never would have guessed. Ahasuerus wasn't the king. He just married the princess, you know, and he became the king with such power that he could kill the princess. That doesn't really make sense, you know. And then his people accepted him as the rightful king. That doesn't really make sense, you know. And then his trusted advisor is a guy who's such a Jew hater that and such a petty person and really a nutball. Koze eneno shoveli. It's all not worth anything to me if I see Mordechai not bowing to me. The guy is an inept weirdo. And how could he end up being, you know, second to the king like that? But, you know, he did. And he was successful, you know, ruler in his own way. And then Mordechai with Bigson and Seresh and Esther getting picked. Crazy. Of all the people, Esther getting picked. And then the timing of the whole king not being able to sleep and the royal chronicle being read, and just that night Haman's wife and family advised him to do something at the worst possible time. Esther really deciding to have the guts to do what she did. Unbelievable human, you know, power that was a gift from Hashem based on, you know, using her Bechira, but Hashem, you know, gave her a gift, I'm sure, to some degree. of help to do that, all behind the scenes, all behind the scenes, the whole thing from beginning to the end, and then Haman getting caught in that vice here between Esther and Achashverosh the way he did, and having no hope at all in the end because of falling on the bed while he was trying to save himself, really, begging her. And then the next thing you know, the Jewish people are given free rein in their country to kill their enemies. You know, and they kill like 50,000 people or something, or 20,000 people, I can't remember. But anyhow, so all this stuff is full of miracles, just like Pesach, but they're a different kind of miracle. They're a hidden miracle, you know? It's the last holiday of the year. Purim is the last holiday of the year, right? The first holiday of the year is Pesach, right? Rishon Hu L'Chad She Hashana. The first holiday of all the months of the year is Pesach, because Nisan is the first month. The last month is Adar. And if there's two Adars, then you celebrated Purim in Adar Sheni, not in Adar Rishon. So it's because Purim has to happen at the very, very end, close to Pesach, because there's a big connection there. One is Nisim Nistarim, and one is Nisim Gluyim, and they're both filled with miracles of a hidden kind and the Pesach of a revealed kind. The point I want to really get to and end with is really this one. What is the core of the Purim experience that we have? Because I'll say, Kiyumu v'Kibla, we accepted the Torah again on Purim, you know? Kiyumu v'Kibla aleihem, Hayudim aleihem, you know, Valzarim, etc. We accepted the Torah. We re-accepted the Torah on Purim. That's like the big event, you know, besides the fact that we were saved, obviously, you know? So how did that happen, you know? Before we weren't keeping the Torah, and now because of the event of Purim, we're saved, but we accepted the Torah upon ourselves, and we did a complete tshuva. How did we do a complete tshuva? What happened that led us to do a complete tshuva successfully? You know, what happened there? So Chazal tell us exactly what happened. And Hashem kind of laments that a little bit. And he says as follows, I gave the Klal Yisrael, I might not get the number right, I'm so sorry, I can't remember the exact number right now, but he says something along the lines of, I gave Klal Yisrael 49 Nevi'im and 7 Nevi'os, 49 male Nevi'im and 7 female prophets. And they didn't do tshuva. They didn't stop. They didn't quit. They didn't save themselves. They didn't do tshuva. It didn't work. What happens the last miracle of the Jewish history? Like the Gemara says, Esther is Sof Kol Hanisim, and it's the end of the holiday in the Jewish year cycle, which goes from Nisan to Adar. What happened? Hashem says. And here Haman gets the ring from Achashverosh, and they eat all the tshuva. Okay, everything clicks. Everything suddenly, finally, everything clicks when Haman gets the ring from Achashverosh. it's really weird. What's he lamenting? So if you look at it on the surface, it's pretty obvious that God is saying, you know, this kind of stinks. You know, here I give Nevi, we say, if you look in all the Sfarim HaKadoshim, they talk about Nevuah, and they say the value of Nevuah is that God's will is given to people in a very clear, unambiguous, clear way. He tells us exactly what to do. So, hang on a second. There's a little music in the background where I am. My apologies. All right. And there's still music here. Well, it's terrible. Okay. Here, this is better. He sent all these prophets to try to tell us what to do, and we didn't listen. The only time that we finally listened was when we were all going to die. You know? Haman gets the ring from Ahasuerus, transfers the ring from his finger, and in doing that, he accomplished more than all of the Nevi'im and Nevi'os could possibly have accomplished, more than what all the Nevi'im and Nevi'os, male and female prophets, ever accomplished. You know, it's kind of disappointing, isn't it? Wouldn't you be disappointed if you were God and you gave us Nevuah, you know, and it didn't really work? And what worked is some jerk who decides that he wants to kill the Jewish people and you know, he gives the ring, he gives the power over to Haman. And he says, here, sign whatever you want with it. You know, you're the Lord of the Rings now. You know, it's kind of weird that would finally take all the credit for saving the Jewish people. You know, it got them to do tshuva, whereas all the prophets and lessons and the Torah and the Chassidus and the Kabbalah and the tshuva speeches and the Musar Sfarim and everything didn't work. But Haman worked. Haman, getting the ring from Ahasuerus, that succeeded. It's kind of depressing. It's disappointing. And between you and me, that's the argument that all the firmies out there, like me, have against recovery. That's why so many Rabbanim are upset about recovery, 12 steps, SA, SAA, SLAA, all the other recovery groups, AA, because masturbating, looking at pornography, these things are sins. So the assumption is that they're in the purvey of Torah and mitzvahs. This is a Torah mitzvah problem. This is a mitzvah avera. This is a Torah issue. This is our territory. Don't mess with it. Don't mess with us. We've got the answer, because Torah has to have the answer to averus and mitzvahs. But when they see that somebody's an addict, they try the Torah mitzvahs, it doesn't help. The rabbis always, just like the psychologists, always, these same rabbis who are so against SAAA 12 steps, they're not against AA when it comes to alcohol. They kind of smile and they say, oh, do what you have to do. But when it comes to mitzvahs and averus, they start getting insecure. Just like psychologists get insecure with 12 steps sometimes. And I myself was told, what do you need to go there for? I'll fix you, blah, 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 blah. Of course, I just kept getting worse because I'm an addict. But anyway, so, and maybe for some addicts, what, you know, psychology would have worked. I don't know. You know, maybe he used the wrong techniques. Maybe a different technique would have worked. But the fact is, I got sober in SA. Thank God I've been sober for 20 years, one day at a time. And life's been great. No, nothing's perfect, but is your life perfect? I don't think so. So this is a great deal. My life is better than I could have imagined, really, in any dream that I could possibly have come up with. My marriage, my Yiddishkeit. Things are very, very good, thank God. One day at a time. Could this guy have given it to me? Well, psychologists feel threatened. Not always, but very often, psychologists and psychiatrists especially feel threatened, just like Rabbanim. Some Rabbanim feel threatened by 12 steps, because 12 steps says God can help me. I just have to learn how to let God into my life, like Haman getting the ring from Ahasuerus taught the Jewish people. The Jewish people, we learned how to let God into our lives. How? by seeing we're going to die, by seeing that the end is coming, by seeing the fact is we deserve to be destroyed because we went to the party of Ahasuerush. We shouldn't have done that. The tzaddik told us not to. We went and we did it. Tshuva here, tshuva there, tshuva, tshuva everywhere. It ain't going to help. We need the ring to be taken off of the finger of Ahasuerush and put onto the ring of Haman. We need to hit bottom. We need to see the end coming. When we actually have that pain enough to fast for 3 days, how did these people fast for 3 days for Esther to have Hatzlacha when she went in by Ahasuerush? How do you fast? Children, how do they fast? How did the whole nation of Israel fast for 3 days? Was it because of Emunas Chachamim? You know, the Chazal told us to fast. Mordechai said we have to be Mekayim, the Divrei. No, no, no. Maybe that's a decision they made, but that's not how they succeeded at actually succeeding at fasting. You fast like that because you're scared to death. That's why you fast like that. That's why they succeeded at getting broken. Lev nishbar v'nidke Elohim lo sivze. God will never, never despise, turn away from, ignore a truly broken heart, not a sad, depressed heart. It's not about the crying. It's not about the crying. It's about the broken ego. It's about saying, oh my God, I was wrong. My way won't work. All my Torah, all my Hayra'a, all my Musar, all my Hasidus, all my tshuva, all my thing, it's all ego. It's not going to help me. It's me trying to take a problem that's really a mental illness, that's really severe, and it's not, and I'm throwing Band-Aids on it. I'm throwing money at it. I'm playing with it because it's much more respectable to do tshuva for a problem than to walk into a room of powerless people and say, I'm one of you. I'm like you. I spoke about the difference between Avraham and Noah in a discussion a long time ago, in the first week or two of these calls. It's very relevant to this topic. Very relevant to this topic. The difference between the Sfasema says there's two kinds of tzaddikim, one that's like Avraham and one that's like Noah. And that's very relevant to this discussion. If you're interested, take a listen to it. Kind of wrapping it up, the handing over of the ring that Ahasuerush gave to Haman was more successful than the Avos, Yirmiyah, Yeshaya, the Imahos, Devorah, all the Nevios, everybody. It was more successful than all of that in accomplishing the goal of bringing Israel to tshuva. And by the way, that goal was so important that Chazal tell us that if not for the fact that Bnei Israel sinned and needed someone to help them do tshuva, and I'm not talking about addicts, I'm talking about sinners now. The fact that Bnei Israel sinned and needed someone to help them do tshuva, if not for that, then the Torah would have, the Tanakh as we know it, would have just been Tan. It would have just been Chamishichum Shitara and Yehoshua. The only reason that there's also the Nevi'im Rishonim and Achronim past Yehoshua is because of the fact that Bnei Israel sinned and we needed to do tshuva and we needed the speeches of the Nevi'im and all this other stuff. Okay? And yet Chazal tell us at the same time that all the Nevi'im failed, all the Nevi'im and Nevi'os failed, where Haman and Ahasuerush, not through their own planning, and not to their credit, succeeded. They succeeded, what they did rather, succeeded where what the Nevi'im, all the Nevi'im did, failed. Okay? This is essential. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous calls hitting bottom. This is what in 12 steps leads a person to say, I admit I'm powerless over my drug and that my life cannot be managed by me. I see that. I see that I can't stop really successfully. I can stop today, I can stop tomorrow, I can stop for one day, but that's not one day at a time doesn't mean force yourself to stop for one day for the rest of your life. That's not what one day at a time means at all. So I can't permanently stop, and I can't continue because this life is too unmanageable. This life is too unmanageable. When I have conflicts and I have pain and I have this and I have that, I end up managing my life using lust. That's what I do. When the going gets tough, the tough get, you know, fantasizing and acting out. Jealousy and pain in the marriage, fear of death, fear of success, fear of life bring me to drinking and acting out. This is, you know, read AA. This is the same problem the alcoholics have. Same exact problem, no different. And the solution is the same as all the alcoholics have. The fact that this addiction happens to include something that's a sin makes the religious people think that, oh, the Torah has to be able to help me. And it might help you, but it didn't help me, and it doesn't help most of the addicts that I know. So if you try it, and it's your duty, you're duty-bound to try Torah and mitzvahs first, try tshuva first, you're duty-bound to do that. If you see that it does not work for you, okay, then this is your opportunity to let go of your ego, which is trying to make this problem more respectable than it really is. It's trying to say, no, this is a tshuva. It's my bechira that's at stake. It's my honor as a, to be a good man. I'm a bad man trying to become good. That's very respectable. But that's all ego for a person who it's really not working for. Hashem wants you to just drop it and say, you know what? Give up the religious ego trip. You're a failure. Now, are you a failure? You're 15 years old. You masturbated 25 times. You can't stop. Hardly any 15-year-old can stop. That doesn't make you an addict, okay? You're a frum guy, and you masturbate once a year, you know, and you look at pornography twice a year. You're probably not an addict. You probably have a yetzer hara, you have a penis, you have desires, and guess what? It's a pretty rough combination, and you need to do tshuva. But if you see that you have a pattern, if you see that you're getting worse over the years, as the years go on, you're actually getting worse. If you get married, and you're sure that getting married, like the rabbi told you, getting married is going to solve your problem, and you see after a year and a half, you're lying to your wife, Kiseder, about the things that you're doing, and you're still acting out actually a little bit more, or maybe less, but a little worse than you did when you were a bacher or a madel, then you're probably an addict, and you need professional help, and you may need 12 steps. You may need God, in other words. You just may. And it's time for you to think to yourself, maybe I'm a failure at this. Maybe I really am not going to succeed. And maybe it's time for me to let go of this egotistical, you know, respectability of calling it, being able to pretend to call it tshuva, pretend that it's tshuva, you know, to keep my self-respect. Maybe it's time for me to get on my knees, figuratively speaking, get on my knees and just admit that I've lost this, not just this battle, but I've lost the battle of life. I'm not a success the way I thought I was a success. I need help. I need a power greater than myself because I cannot do it. Not just I can't stop, but I can't really make this life into a good life because the stuff that I'm doing, the lying and the faking that I'm doing makes me a failure. And I need to be a success in this life. I'm a good person. I'm not a bad person. And I deserve a good life. I wasn't given a neshama for nothing. I was given a neshama, and I have a God who loves me and created me for a purpose, not to be a failure. So I need help to become a success story. That's what 12 Steps is all about. God didn't create, I'm a failure. And God didn't create me to be a failure. So what the heck am I going to do now? Getting that help. Stepping out of the ego. Get out of the boxing ring. You know, I got to fight and win. Oh, that's called ego. No. The Torah says, okay. So then do what the Torah says. Try. Open the missile. Yishar, nimsaha, milchama, all of me, panim v'ochor. Fight. Like the Mishael Yisharim says, fight. You're a Jew, you have a Yetzer Hara, fight it. Rigzu v'al techetau. But if it doesn't work and you see that you're really, over time, you're really getting worse over time. You're not really getting better over time. Over time, you're really getting worse. If you see that that's the truth about you, if you see that you got married and you were supposed to stop when you got married, the rabbi said, don't worry, when you get married, it'll be okay. For me, it's okay, so don't worry. For you, it'll be okay. If you see that, it's not true for you, and it's actually worse. How much more do you have to lie and fake until you're going to be ready to say, I've lost, I'm broken. It's time for me to do whatever's necessary. And I've already gotten 50 calls from guys on Guard Your Eyes over the past 9 or so years that I've been on Guard Your Eyes. Oh, Dove, I'm ready to, not calls. They wouldn't call because they're too ashamed. I've gotten these emails. Hi, I'm Chuba613, Gingerbread Man, and this. And I promise, I can't stand it. Gewalt, gewalt, I can't stand it. I'm willing to do anything. Okay, call me. You want my phone number? We'll talk. How are you going to do this over email? You think Guard Your Eyes is going to work for you if you're a real addict? Oh, hi, I'm Chuba613. What's your name? Oh, my name is Steiging, higher. Oh, really? Oh, that's such a great name. Are you clean? Are you on the 90 days wall of honor? Did you make 90 days? Yes, I did. And, how'd you do it? Well, okay, thank you, Steiging. Oh, you're welcome, Chuba613. Good luck. Just hold on. You can make it. make a tough six shvuah. See how far you get. If it works for you, gesunter, hey. I have no problem. I'm not suggesting don't do what works. If it works for you, do it. But if it doesn't work for you, you see that it's foolishness. You see that it's narishkeit. Klal Yisrael could not have gotten the Torah. Being makabel the Torah was a cataclysmic event that changed us forever. Look in Rav Dessler about the first Luchos versus the second Luchos and why the first Luchos are Menachem Ba'aron. The events, Ilu Kervano Amokam Lefnei HaSinai Velo Nasalano Es HaTorah Dayenu. How can you say that? Because bringing us to Sinai changed us forever, even without the giving of the Torah. The whole thing changed us. Why couldn't he just bring us to HaSinai by email? Make it a virtual thing. Put a little apple thing on our eyes. Pretend that you're by HaSinai. Email you. We'll go and Guard Your Eyes where it's all anonymous. It's not anonymous. It's secret. We'll go and Guard Your Eyes where it's private. And, experiences don't happen by proxy. The experiences that life is made of, that real life is made of, real life change, doesn't happen by proxy. It doesn't happen by a phone call. It doesn't happen by an email, especially if you're using a fake name to other people who are fake names. Jeff Foxworthy has a great joke. You might be a redneck if you've ever proposed for marriage on a payphone. You hear the joke? It's not something that you don't do in person. That's something you do in person. What's the matter with you? Recovery doesn't work unless it's in person. Guard on Guard Your Eyes sent out a video about 5 years ago to everybody. It was the most unbelievable, maybe 3-4 years ago. It was the most unbelievable video that showed everything you knew about addiction. It's a YouTube video from some young guy. Everything you ever knew about addiction is wrong. What does the guy say? He says very simple. he says that addiction and recovery, the solution is relationships, real relationships. Well, what do you think the 12 steps is about? The 12 steps is about God being real to me. How does God become real to me? By having a real honest relationship with God. How do you have an honest relationship with God if you're already a firm guy and you've been masturbating and hiding it from everybody around you and acting like everything's okay and shul? And the more averus you do, the firmer you get, that you're a fake. That's a fake relationship with God. Look at, I gave another talk about Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai and honesty, and how when he told his talmidim before he died, Yehi mora shamayim aleichem kimora basar v'dam. And I explained in that talk, it's on one of these recordings, I'll try to get Guard to label it as Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, taking God seriously. Is the title, I think. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is talking to Talmidim. These aren't the sweat hogs. These aren't the dregs. These are his Talmidim. These were Tanoim. Tanoim. And he's about to die, the greatest Tan of his generation, at the greatest moment of his life. He's dying. Or he's going to die soon at that time of that story. And they ask him for a final bracha. And he says, you know, before his final illness, and he says, you should take Hashem as seriously as you take a guy at a bus stop. As you take anybody else, a real person who's looking at you. And they go, Gevalt, that's all. And he says, yeah, I'm not talking about Yir Shemayim Madregas. I'm talking about taking God seriously. You don't take God seriously. He's talking to Tanoim, right? Argue with me. He's talking to Tanoim. And he's saying to them, you don't take God seriously, as seriously as you take anybody who's watching you, a total stranger, who you don't care about. But you do. You the things you won't do with anyone watching you that you'll do with God watching you. Why? You go to shul, you're a frum guy, you're Isaac and Klal Yisrael, this and that, and you die, and you're doing kiseder over, and I'm not talking about averus. I'm not saying you do such bad averus, and yet here you try doing a mitzvah. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about a guy who or a gal who's in a pattern where this is your lifestyle. This is what you do, and you've been doing it for years. I get calls upon calls upon calls from guys who say, you know, oh, it's terrible. I've been doing these problems. And then I ask them, how long has it been going on? He goes, about 4 months, you know, or two, or a year now. Gevalt, it's so long. And I say, wait a minute. You mean when you were a teenager before you were married, you weren't masturbating yourself to nude videos? Or you weren't looking at, you know, naked pictures, pornography, etc.? Or you never masturbated yourself habitually? And they go, oh, yeah, I did. But, you know, that's a whole different story. No, it's not. Hello? You're just continuing what you've always been doing. That's not a comfortable pill to swallow. And they realize, of course, that they have. They're just the same that they've always been. Nothing changed. You know? Nothing changed. It's the same problem that they've always had. It's just done differently. It's just being done differently, but it's the same problem. You know, these guys call and they say, Gevalt, I'm ready to do anything, anything, anything. I go, okay, well, give me a call. He goes, oh, I'm not comfortable doing that. Can I call you from a Google number? You know, I'm not really comfortable using my real name. Well, you know my real name. I say it all the time. Well, how do I know that's your real name? Come on, everybody, guard your eyes, using fake names. Of course, Dove isn't your real name, you know? And it's like, you know, this is what's going on. And then when they call, they're not such a gibor anymore. It's like, hello, hello. Yeah, hi. I'm the one who called you. You know, why all the shame? Why all the shame? Is it because of the evil of the sin? Well, you know, I masturbated. It's the Zohar HaKadosh. Oh, the Sfarim, it's such a terrible avera. I looked at naked people. It's so embarrassing. What a terrible avera I did. No. That's not what's going on. It's the fact that what you do is so vastly and totally different than who you are, who you present yourself as. This is such a stira. This is such a contradiction, such incredible hypocrisy compared to who I present myself as all the time to everyone I know, even on Guard Your Eyes. It's such a hypocrisy that it's okay for me to say the truth on Guard Your Eyes because nobody sees who I am. Nobody knows anything about me. Nobody hears my voice. Nobody knows my name. And nobody should know my name because Guard Your Eyes is not a safe place to be open or identify who you are at all. Guard Your Eyes is the last place I would be open and identify my job, where I live, what I do, who I am, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, my full name. You don't do that on Guard Your Eyes. It's the most dangerous environment that there is because you don't know, because everybody else is fake. You don't know who anybody else is. The most dangerous person to you is the person who you can't see who they really are. People who are standing on a line to in the supermarket in carts, standing there, will never, rarely cut off somebody else. But you'll always cut people off on the highway because you're just a car. They don't see you. You're just a big car. So you don't have that shame. People say the stupidest things and lose their jobs all the time from emailing crass, racist, disgusting things to each other. And they get in all kinds of trouble losing their jobs and stuff. This has happened over and over because it's just an email, and they'll send it out to mass people because you'll say a lot of things in email that you would never say in person. You'd never say it on the phone. You'd never say it, you know, if they were really there because there's a little fakeness in it. It's not really real. So it's not so scary. It's not so embarrassing because they don't see who I really am while I'm saying this. It's not factual hypocrisy. It's only theoretical hypocrisy. I'm on Guard Your Eyes. I'm a firm guy, and I do all these various voices, so I'm not hypocritical. There's no relationship there. It's not real. That's why you can say the truth. That's a relationship. Just like all the men who tell me, we have tremendous shalom bias. Our relationship is great, but I've been sleeping with prostitutes for the, six or seven times a year for the past 10 years. I'm like, well, but our shalom bias is great. I'm afraid to see a psychiatrist because the wife's going to find out, da-da-da, and it will ruin our shalom bias. That's shalom bias. I'm a firm guy. I give shiurim, to hundreds of people, and I look at pornography pretty constantly, often, very often I'm in the office looking at pornography, but we have tremendous shalom bias. That's shalom bias. I get better in recovery, and I'm clean for 2 years, and my Yiddishkeit is getting a little weak. What, you had Yiddishkeit before? You're a fake. You had shalom bias before? You only reason you had shalom bias is because your wife didn't know who you are. That's shalom bias. Shalom bias is since you don't know the truth about me, you love me. That's shalom bias. You call that shalom bias? Does any rav call that shalom bias? Except for a rav who doesn't know what he's talking about. Oh, we don't understand the shalom bias. That's shalom bias. You have shalom bias. You have a good relationship. When the wife finds out about it, is she going to be angry because my husband's a terrible adulterer? Or is she going to be angry because she's a woman scorned? Because you played me for a fool. I slaved away and I did things for you, and I did things for you, and I did things for you. And I was honest, and I was good, and I was faithful, and I was loving and tender and caring and sacrificed and worked and worked and worked and supported you in Kollel and here and there and made myself into this and that for you. And in the meantime, Night Seder was really Porn Seder half the time. Oh, but I'm struggling so hard, sweetheart. You don't understand how hard the Yetzer Hara. Can you please save the sob story for somebody else? Save it for Hashem after you go up to Shemayim. Save the sob story for him. He'll understand. I'm a human being. I don't understand. And she shouldn't understand, because she's married to a fake. she's married to a trickster, and a very frum trickster. And the frummer we are, the bigger liars we are, and the worse we are when it comes to addiction. Not when it comes to averus. Not averus. Everybody does averus. Everybody needs to do tshuva. Everybody struggles with the yetzara. But if you're an addict and you're not getting help, you're not quitting because you're not getting help because you insist on doing tshuva, or for any other reason, because it's too embarrassing to actually meet someone in recovery and talk face to face, because that's too honest. It's too dangerous. I might lose my job. I might be found out. Are you kidding? There's meetings going on in every firm neighborhood that exists with Rabbanim in there and doctors and lawyers and Carlo Jungerman and Rashi Kolo going to these meetings the world over, all over the whole world in SA. And they're not losing their jobs. And they've been going to meetings for 5, 10, 20 years. It's not, you're not going to lose your job. If you do it on Guard Your Eyes, you're going to lose your job because it's Mesis Menacharakim. People see their Roevein and Erech, so they're dangerous people. But if you meet live with a person who you know is serious in recovery for years already, this person won't do anything to hurt you. They're here to help. Anyhow, if you need the help, get the help. You don't have to wait for Haman to get the ring from the Ahasuerus, do you? Sadly, though, yes, most of us do. I did, and most of us do have to wait for Haman to get that ring, to get that ring from Ahasuerus. That's precisely the truth. And until that happens, we're not going to get the help that we need, because the pain of shame is greater than the pain of being ourselves. Until the pain of being ourselves is greater than the pain of fear and shame of admitting who we are to safe people, we're never going to get the help that we really need. So my bracha to myself and to everybody is that for all the things that I need to change, that we need to change, and we get the help that we need without having to have the ring get transferred over to our own personal Haman hand. Thanks a lot. If you have any feedback, you can email me at wequithiding2, the number 2, and the first word is wequithiding, 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 and the number 2, at gmail.com. Just let me know what you want to share about it if you have any feedback or comments. Hatzlacha, have a good day. Next Thursday, God willing, the topic's going to be a lot lighter. This was a little bit more on the serious side, but it'll be a lot lighter, and it'll be about Bein Hazmanim and the pitfalls of Bein Hazmanim, how to try, what are the problems really in Bein Hazmanim? Why is Bein Hazmanim such a problem for so many of us, particularly, addicts? Why is that? Hatzlacha, everybody have a good day.